Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, good evening, everyone, and welcome to ScaryCast. This is Dr. John, and we got an exciting show lined up here tonight. First of all, I want to welcome all of the listeners at TuneIn. Thank you very much for being here, along with listeners from iTunes and Spotify and wherever else you are. And, of course, we are live right now on VOC Nation, the home of Brady Hicks, the home of WCW Retro. And speaking of WCW Retro, we have got the one and only host of WCW Retro, Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling. How are you doing tonight, Papa Stro?
Hello. A pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's always good to have you. In fact, you and I were just talking about dominating Thursday night on VOC Nation. You're there at 9, and you're here with me at 11, and I'm there with you at 9. So it's great. It's just great to have you here. And I wanted to ask you, we were talking a little bit just before the show came on. I was asking you, how young were you? Of course, you're an accomplished wrestler. You're a star of independent wrestling now. You are a superstar at WCW, and you have wrestled all over the world. You're an accomplished MMA guy. And not only that, you are now, after that great career, you're still wrestling, and you're now a big star on the internet and on a couple of series and everything, and you've got your own documentary. And that documentary is floating around at a number of major film festivals, which we're very proud that it is and doing well. Do me a favor. Tell us when did you first start enjoying wrestling? And I know you said you've done other things. You played football. You've been a heck of an accomplished athlete and everything. But when did you first start thinking about wrestling and thinking that you wanted to be one of the guys in the squared circle?
This goes way back, back to my childhood, enjoying wrestling on television and going to the wrestling events when I was a young kid. And I got getting to meet some of the wrestling stars back then and personalities. It just encouraged the passion to become a professional wrestler. And the journey to professional wrestling brought me to many other venues and avenues, thus acting in theater, being involved in other athletics, track and field, football, mixed martial arts, up to the pro wrestling industry. So and through the pro wrestling industry, it's ventured me out more into the acting field for television and film, which I've been pleasured and honored enough to be a part of different films in recent years, and I'm still involved, very heavily involved in film and television
yeah.
series, including the one I'm currently starring in, the Dust series, so starring as the Chief, which is a great supernatural series and story that we're starting our third season of that this year, actually, and which I'm going to be at set for the first episode this coming weekend, which I'm very excited about. So it's a very exciting story this season three, the Dust series, for those that have kept up in the Dust series. So I'm very excited for everyone to check us out this new season.
Yeah. Dusk is a great thing. Ronald Rossman's won awards for that. You have too. I want to get back to some firsts for Papa Stro, because you and I so seldom get to talk like this, in front of people and talking about your story and everything. I'll tell you, if you'll tell me, who was the first professional wrestler that you got to meet and talk to back when you were a kid?
Bruiser Brody and Stan Hansen. In which I always referred to Bruiser Brody as Blackbeard, because I had a fixation for pirates back then and pirate stories, and Blackbeard was like my favorite pirate to talk about. And Bruiser Brody, for some reason, always reminded me of the story of Blackbeard. And I would usually shout Blackbeard every time I'd see him, and he would get a kick out of it, actually. So it was really kind of cool. I would say seeing those two, seeing Rocky Johnson and Ivan Koloff live, which was it was weird looking back, because it was almost like a precursor into me later on joining the professional wrestling industry, because Ivan Koloff was one of my mentors and trainers, along with the Andersons and Nelson Royals. So it's funny how things in life kind of segue into different avenues.
Yeah, exactly. Well, my first meeting with a wrestler, you might chuckle, was in Morganton, North Carolina. We were headed up to Lake James. We had a boat up there. And my dad stopped at the Carbon City gas station to get gas. And he came back to the car. He said, "Son, there's a fella inside that I want you to meet. I think you'd be interested in meeting him." And, of course, I was always watching wrestling. So I walked in, and believe it or not, now you're going to laugh, but I think you know him, or at least I don't know if you wrestled against him, but I know you know him. There was Jesse James from NWA Charlotte. Do you remember him?
I sure do.
Yeah, and he was just so nice to me. He grabbed, I'll never forget, he grabbed like a paper towel and autographed it. We didn't have anything else. We were at the Carbon City gas station. I mean, that's where you got your cheap gas. And he talked to me for about 15 minutes. My dad said that my mouth never closed. I was just in awe of talking to him. And I talked to him about some of the matches that I'd seen of him on television. This was before I'd gone to Charlotte Park Center. And it was absolutely phenomenal. What a nice guy. He was there with his wife, and they actually had family in the area. So he was the first wrestler I got to meet. And then the next one, it was so much longer. When I was 30 years old, I got to meet the Italian champion, who, of course, is somebody that I had seen. And lo and behold, there he was doing independent wrestling, and he talked to me for 5 minutes and said, "You want to be my announcer? I think you should be." And I said, "Absolutely." I was stunned. I was thrilled, and that's how I got in the wrestling business. But you know, it's the first wrestlers you talk to. If Jesse James hadn't been a good guy, I probably would have quit thinking about wrestling, and I wouldn't have bugged my parents to take me to Charlotte Park Center. But for goodness sake, he was great. He was really nice. He was in shape, and he looked like a wrestler. Looked like he did on television, and it was so much fun. And he had just done like a main event there. He made his way to the main events with Sailor Art Thomas at the Charlotte Park Center. Of course, it is no longer the Charlotte Park Center anymore. It's the Grady Cole Center where we do the Charlotte Minicon. But yeah, it was great. And you know, I think when you meet the first one, and you met Stan Laria Hansen, huh? Where did you meet?
Oh, yeah.
Where
yeah.
did you meet those guys?
Well, I did a lot of moving around when I was a kid. You know, I got from a military family. So, I mean, you know, out west and down south of Florida, back to North Carolina. So, you know, I got to meet quite a few people that I eventually got to work with and wrestle with later on. Steve Kern, the Grahams, Big Cat Ernie Ladd, Jimmy Boogie Wiggum and Valiant, the Funks, the Briscoes, Blackjack Mulligan, Big John Studd. I mean, Iron Sheik, Kevin Sullivan. I mean, the list goes on and on. In which, funny story about Blackjack Mulligan and Ric Flair. First time I bumped into both of them, they were at a convenience store getting ready to head out of town to the next town, and they were getting drinks for the trip. And
okay.
They were kind of worse for wear at the time. They're tired, and I ended up having them carry their drinks out to their car, their vehicle, take off. And so, like, years later, when, you know, being in the business, right, and when I saw them again, they actually remember the time I helped them carry their drinks to their car and ended up buying me a drink later on that night after the show. So I thought that was really cool.
Wow. Yeah, it's like, to get started, you have to do things for people, and you just never know where it's going to take you. But it took you a long, long way. Now, One story.
Johnny Weaver. I would say about Johnny Weaver was another one
Oh heck yeah.
Was really cool to meet, and because I know Nelson would tell me stories about Johnny Weaver and the fact that, you know, he would work out, but he always looked the same. Right? He always had the same build, right? And meeting Johnny,
yeah.
It was really cool. Johnny was such one of the nicest people I've met in the business. I mean, really, really cool, down to earth. And, you know, it was really cool. And being on, I actually met him when I was talking to Nelson on the Nelson's Ranch. And it was the very same ranch where they filmed the vignette where Baby Dog ran off a Dusty, with one of Nelson's horses, the bit with Dusty Rhodes, when she was valeting for him for 30 days because he won the match where he had to valet for Dusty for 30 days over Tully Blanchard. And it was the bit where she took the horse and, like, ran out, and Dusty claimed that she took his credit cards and everything. Left him. Right?
Oh, yeah.
And they're sitting on the – and then later on that night, they're sitting at the campfire. Dusty's sick, crying the blues to Nelson, right? And he said, yeah, he left me. He left me, Nelly. He left me. And Nelson's like, yeah, I know, Dusty. I know. It's sad.
That's great. So, we've all had our great stories. Now, one story that you haven't told here on ScaryCast that I love is when you were doing some training up there with Nelson Royal. He had, of course, Nelson Royal's. He had a Western Wear store there in Mooresville. He had that.
Oh yeah.
Had that barn where he trained, and he had a ring, and sometimes the Andersons would come up there, wouldn't they?
Oh yeah, I mean, some of the who's who of the business have been up there. Ricky Steamboat's visited a few times. Ken Shamrock was training up there at one point, and it was quite a few people went up there to train them there in the area. And I bought quite a few things from Nelson World Wrestling Store. Cowboy boots, you name it. Pretty awesome.
Yeah, I got to meet Nelson when we were doing a big wrestling event there in Mooresville at the National Guard Armory. It was Professional Wrestling Federation, and we were doing a big fundraiser for a church there. And he had everybody. He had Johnny Weaver come by. Johnny didn't wrestle, but he just came by to say hello. Nelson Royal came by. I mean, it was great. I monopolized Nelson Royal's time for about an hour talking to him because he was certainly my favorite. And I like the story you told, if you would, about the truck driver, because as you said, the Andersons had tendon strength, and that was a big deal if you're a wrestler, isn't it?
Well, not everybody had it. I mean, just very few people. It's just part of genetics, if you will. I mean, some people were just born with that natural tendon strength. And that's why mountain climbers can balance themselves on the cliff with their hands. Because, I mean, some are born with it. Some, you know, they develop it in time. But Gene Anderson definitely had it. Yeah, he can make men twice his size, bring them down to his knees just by grabbing them. You just want to freaking cry. But particular incident I think you were talking about was I was at the store with Nelson, and a truck driver came up to him. He said, "I want to beat up the Andersons." He said, "Really?
Okay.
I want to fight the Andersons, right?" So we gave him directions where to find them because they were training at the barn, right?
Mm-hmm.
So. So this guy went up there, right? And we're just like looking at each other like, oh boy, here we go, right? And then all of a sudden, like, I think maybe an hour and a half later or so went by, and all of a sudden he comes back in, about to collapse. And some lady yells, "Oh my God, someone call 911. He was all bangled and everything. It turned out, the story is, when he got in, as soon as he walked in, they just snatched him in the ring. No punches were thrown or anything. They just put their knees on him, formed him, just pretty much punished him, and then kicked him out of the barn.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
That was back in the day. That was back in the day, and you know those guys were great. I mean, I think they're still. They're both still around, aren't they?
Gene, unfortunately, has passed. But one of the toughest tag teams in the history of the business, hands down. I mean, these guys, they put their own wing in tag team wrestling, more or less.
Yeah, they really did, and I know that a lot of the younger Bucks were always a little concerned about going up against them because they knew it was going to be rough. So, but anyway, that's absolutely one of my favorite stories. And not only have you been a wrestler and you are a wrestler today, you've got at least what I know at least one world championship, and you're always in contention for others. You have done a lot of work in movies. Now, one that we had not talked about for a while, and you mentioned it, I don't know, the last day or two, you mentioned about a paranormal experience that you had when you were on the set of The Hollow Oak. And that was a scary movie. Do you mind telling us that story? I think you told it to me last night or maybe the night before, but I really enjoy that story. About what happened late that night in the Hollow Oak. Yeah, that was last night, but Scarycast people don't know about it, and Scarycast people love ghost stories. So do you mind sharing that one with us?
Well, it was one of our all-night shoots for the film The Hollow Oak, which is a very interesting story about the history of an old oak tree and what it's seen from back in the day to modern time, in which the scene where particularly shooting that night of the incident was a hanging scene of one of the witches, and I was portraying pretty much the judge of the witch hunters before condemning and hanging the witch in the scene. And around 3 o'clock when we were filming this scene, when the actors doing our lines, there was a faint voice repeating what we were saying. And we kept looking around seeing who it was, and the sound lady was telling us, "Hey guys, you got to hear this." And she was picking it up too, and her sound doing the sound. And we're like, you know, what's going on here, right? So we're, you know, keep in mind, 3 o'clock, witching hour, dead of night. We're looking around to find out who's repeating our lines, because you know it was just us on set. And down the path we were shooting, there was this. We found this graveyard with unmarked epitaphs. And we got to looking at each other. It's like, you know, I guess we have some fans of the film we didn't know about. So it was a very interesting night, more or less, getting like EVPs through the sound lady of ghosts repeating our lines. Admiring what we were doing.
Now, did that happen to make it into the film or not?
I'm not sure if the director put it in the outtakes or not, but I mean, personally, I thought it'd be really cool if they did. That'd be pretty interesting, right?
Well, you know, it would, because I don't know that a ghost has ever been featured in a film. And
well,
if
you recall, 3 Men and a Baby, I think the name of the movie was. With Tom Selleck.
Yeah.
And there was a ghost actually in that movie that they had not planned. What's it all set up? I mean, there's an actual ghost in the movie. If you look, that was filmed.
Really? I'll check that out. I think that's very interesting. I mean, people, ghosts are all, I don't know anybody. Now, I'd say this, when I was growing up, nobody ever talked about ghosts. Today, I don't know anybody that hasn't had an experience with a ghost or a UFO. I mean, you've either had an experience with one of the everybody but our buddy Dave Atwell. And he's like the only one, I think, that hasn't had a ghost story or a UFO story, and he's hanging out with his dogs, and he's a great guy, and we love having him on on Pop Culture Stars. But that's really neat that in the Hollow Oak you had an experience of ghosts actually repeating your lines. I mean, that is kind of scary. Now, did the Hollow Oak, did it ever get distribution, or is that one that we'll just have to wait for another 10 or 20 years and maybe we'll find it on late night on TV? Did it ever get out that you know of?
I think he was planning to put it on Vimeo or YouTube. I'll have to double check to make sure. But I know that they had plans of working on a sequel to that as well. So you know, it was kind of a wait and see deal in that situation.
Yeah. But,
Actually, you know, with that type of incident, that wasn't my first time being involved with the supernatural, more or less. I did a few ghost hunting exhibitions a while back, in which we'd go to some of the haunted places, like haunted prisons and so forth. And one particular incident, I was with the ghost hunting team. We're on lockdown for a penitentiary outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in which there was an Indian burial ground right next to the prison. So there was a lot of activity supposedly going on. So I was with a team that investigating the prison and dead of night, and a lot of activity. And oh my goodness. From a dust in the air from a ghost, I got ticked off at one of the ghost hunters for trying to ask them too many questions, to bats sleeping in the cells, to all kinds of commotion going on in the rafters of the prison. It was very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like fun. I've never been on a lockdown. I don't know that I would want to. I think I may have a stroke if it got just too scary. I like to have a door to go out of. Although the last time I had a door to go out of, the floor caved in on me. I almost broke my arm and took a miracle healing to get me back in place. I'll just tell you, those lockdowns are just they're as scary as they can be, is all I got to say. Anyway, that is neat. I mean, we've all had experiences that we like to share. Now, it is interesting that, okay, you're a wrestler, you're an actor, but you got cast to play in this marvelous, marvelous series called Dusk. And a lot of folk are going to hear about Dusk from, Scary Cast. We're going to have Ronald Rossman on here in a couple of weeks talking about the new Dusk and what's going on in season 3, because our not only you, our friend Papa Stroh, but our friend Cassie Page, she's a star in there. But if you don't mind, and hopefully it won't be out of place, if you could tell us a little bit about the story of Dusk, basically from last year when you were the star last year, you started your gig there, and it was very, very successful. It had an enormous amount of people watching it on the internet. And if you could tell us a little bit about just the storyline, so that for those that want to catch it starting season 3, they'll kind of be up to it. Would you mind doing that?
Well, it's more of a story about all the supernatural phenomena: vampires, werewolves, witches, celestials, what have you, and their involvement with the world and their agreements and their disagreements and all the drama that entails with it. And it's telling the story about each one of these supernatural phenomena, in which things are leading into segue into season 3, in which there's been a master plan revealed, in which the supernatural phenomena are going to have to take sides. One side is trying to preserve and save mankind, and the other one is wanting to do away with mankind. And my role in the Dust series, I star as a chief. Well, he used to be a past pirate.
Years there back, you go with your Cornelius. Pirates.
Cornelius, yes. And I used to have a ship made out of human bones, literally. I was a real bad apple. in which eventually I got into it with the Grim Reaper and won. And so thus I was the new face of death, thus being the new Grim Reaper. And segueing into today, modern time, I was hired by Majestic as being the chief to keep myself out of trouble, because I had a tendency of doing that in the past. I was one big bad apple, and this was Majestic's way of kind of helping them out, but keeping me in line so I won't, you know, be in a doghouse, more or less, because I'm in my wicked ways, right? So going into season three, there's going to be a lot. It's going to be really intense, and things are going to be heating up with the main characters in the series, in which the only word I can describe is intense. So I'm really excited for the Dust series fans to check it out.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think it's a wonderful show. Ronald Rossman has done a great job. He's going to fill us in here in a couple of weeks, and you will be one of the co-hosts, so that'll be a lot of fun. And I think we'll enjoy it. Now, not only do you have you got your ghost hunting experiences, you've got ghosts on the set, you're playing the chief in Dusk, you have a very close friend that you carry around with you all the time, and her name's Dorothy. And I can tell you, by you, I'm telling everybody's listening, Dorothy can scare the heck out of people. We can say she's a doll, but she's not, is she a living doll? I don't know. Why don't you tell us the story? How did you meet Dorothy? How did she become your mascot for Papa Stro the wrestler? And what does she mean? I think she's got a great story, and this is something a lot of people don't know. If you don't mind sharing that with us.
What's that song by Rob Zombie, Living Dead Girl? That would perfectly describe Dorothy. She's very unique. It's always a good time with Dorothy. Yeah. Dorothy, with the Papa Stro persona that I do, Dorothy represents the souls of lost children that give Papa Stro the power, supernatural power, to seek out all the evil in the world. And Dorothy is quite unique. Not many people realize it, but Dorothy does have a sense of humor. And she gets her kicks off of freaking people out sometimes. But she's always ahead of the Comic-Con. She's always ahead of the wrestling events. She's got her own stroller. She's got her own tricycle at night. She hangs on the rocking chair, hangs out with my cats and dogs. quite the personality. And she's got quite a number of reactions in my travels as well. So, and she's getting her own fan following. It's amazing.
I'll tell you, Dorothy's quite popular. I know that she has scared a few people. We won't mention the name, but there's a particular artist that hangs out at Comic-Cons. And why don't you fill us in on that story? That's one of my favorite Papa Stro stories, but this is a true story. This is how good Papa Stro is in front of people, and when he brings Dorothy, this is the kind of stuff she can do. You know the one I'm talking about, don't you, Papa Stro?
Oh yeah, we're at a steakhouse one night, and we're sitting after a Comic-Con event, and I'm hanging out with some of the vendors and artists, and we're just chatting away, and the service was kind of slow. And things were, you know, kind of dull, so I figured I wanted to have some fun. I had Dorothy in the back, so I took out Dorothy, and I sat her in the seat in the table behind us. So we just kept on talking. And, you know, waitresses, they were bumping into each other, and the cooks were, like, staring at Dorothy the whole time. And one of the artists kept looking at Dorothy sitting at her table, and all of a sudden he just yells out and says, "She's coming for me," right? And it was just like that scene in that one movie where a lady in the car shows a guy a spider, and he's got arachnophobia, and he freaks out, and he puts his hands and face against the window crying help. That was his exact reaction when he was yelling, "She's coming for me," because as soon as he said that, Dorothy fell out of her chair, the arm stretched out like she was trying to reach for him. He got so scared. He literally put his hands and face against the window behind our table, crying, "Help, help." And we're like dying laughing, right? And I, I pick up Dorothy to put her back on her chair, and she had the biggest smile on her face, you know. She's got such a
good Are you sure she fell or she jumped?
She had her arm stretched out like she was reaching for him. It's hysterical.
Yeah, well, you're the only person I know carries a seriously haunted doll around. Dorothy's great. I get along with her just fine.
Well, you know how kids are. You know, kids, they're full of energy. You know what I mean? Can't take them anywhere.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what. When people walk by your table, and if I'm at your merch table and you've stepped away for a minute, and I get the strangest looks about Dorothy. Is everything okay? Is she all right? Where'd she come? I said, you'll just have to wait. You'll have to talk to her buddy, Papa Stroh. Yeah, you just wouldn't believe the comments that people make about her, and it's very interesting. And it fits into your persona of Papa Stroh, which is such a great wrestling persona. I'll never forget, and I'll sell this. The best I've been around wrestling a long, long time, most of my life. The greatest wrestling entrance I ever saw was in Wilmington. And you were wrestling for the World Heavyweight Championship against our best friend, L.A. Tang. And I'll never forget, the Papa Stroh music comes on, and all of a sudden, the stroller comes rolling out of where the wrestlers, you know, made their entrance. And so Tank is standing there waiting on you. His entourage is waiting on you. Everybody in the entire place, there were hundreds of people, and you had everybody staring at that stroller. When all of a sudden you come from the front door running in like an I don't know what, yelling and screaming, and I was so embarrassed, I said, I have been had. I mean, you truly knew how to draw us all in by just, I'd never seen it happen. You pushed that stroller out, it rolled out, we were all waiting for you to come out there, Tank was, and then all of a sudden you come in and you are just you scared the heck out of us, and I felt had. It's terrible. And by the way, we just had a greeting.
Usually I come out the fog. that's pretty interesting.
I should have known something was wrong. It was going to be different, but yeah, you had me, and it was great. I mean, you're just a master. Yeah. You talk about how it is when you draw people in, and everything that you do matters. And the reason I was laughing is you got to make everything count,
you know.
Yeah, you do. And unfortunately, I'm just too transparent. Our friend Jen Cruz of the She Squatchers, she just sent me a text on Facebook and said, "I'm listening to Scarycast. Hey Jen, we love you. We're glad you're alive. We hope you don't freeze up there in Fargo, North Dakota, because it's awfully cold. And thank you for saying hello, Papa Stroh. She's saying hello to both of us, and that's great.
Oh, hi, Jen.
And I feel so sorry for those people, that are up there, because it's so cold. I can hardly handle it. So anyway, and we've got a friend of yours and friend of mine who's on here. And and Jen is sending us warmth. She's the only person I know that can send warmth from the cold air of the Midwest right now. And we appreciate it, Jen. You're the best. And
stay
all
warm,
that.
Jen.
One of the very talented cheese squatchers, and she's great. We got a call in right now. He's been waiting a little bit while you finished a couple of your great stories. We've got Justin in. How you doing, Justin?
Pretty good. How are you? What's up, Stro?
Wonderful. You've been listening.
Hey,
how's everybody doing?
Recount some of his stories. Dustin, have you got a question for Papa Stro? We sometimes don't have an opportunity to get to talk to him and ask him questions about this great career he's had and all the things he's done. You got a good question for him tonight?
Of course.
Good.
Who's your favorite wrestler to tag with, or who's your favorite person to feud with, have a rivalry with?
Wow, I've been blessed to have a lot of cool partners over the years. Jake the Snake Roberts would definitely have to be one of them, and he was really, really cool to team with. Not only was he's a mentor, he's always, a good friend and brother. You always learn something new every time you're around Jake. And teaming with him, teamed with Raven a few times. Scott Hall back in his Razor Ramon. Tommy Rich, Doug Gilbert back in the Memphis days, Lawler and Dundee, and PG-13. I teamed a while back with Gorgeous Jimmy Garvin at one time, back when I was Gorgeous George. That was really cool.
That was
a real treat. Yeah. And it was kind of cool because he always came out to a song that we both liked, the Phil Collins in the Air Tonight.
Mm-hmm.
That was really cool. But yeah, I very
That's
very
a good song.
Team, great tag team partners through the years. I remember one time teaming up with King Mabel, Viscera, right? And he was bigger than most of the guys who he would tag against. And but he'd always tag me in so I can get like a cool suplex in or something. He liked to watch me suplex guys. Get one of your suplexes, okay. And I would have to like pick them all up because they're all he's pretty much obliterated the other team by the time he tagged me in, right? I've been blessed and really grateful to have some good tag partners. And like over the years, feuding with, I've had a lot of things in the bucket list I've crossed off through the years. Flair, Steamboat, Funk, and many others. I'm sure there's one guy I've always wanted to step in the ring with, I haven't had a chance to, which is Kurt Angle. But Kurt Angle to me is just amazing. And being from that type of background that he's from, I still appreciate everything that he's done and so much respect for him and all that. So I would definitely say if I had a dream match, it would definitely be Kurt Angle.
Hey, Stro. Hey, Stro, mm-hmm. do you think you and Dr. John would ever be like a tag team for like one time? For a one time thing.
You might have to ask Dr. John on that one.
Hey, John. Hey, do you think you and Papa Stro would be? You guys could do it one night? Be a tag team, and then on that night you guys win the tag titles. That would be amazing.
Well, I think what I would do if I was allowed, I might be a manager for him one night. Papa Stro, I might could manage you. I don't know that I could wrestle with
All right.
because that's been too long ago. But maybe we can talk with Adam at Battleground, and one evening I can come out and be. And be your mouth of the South.
I'm sorry about that goofy question.
You got me
one.
At least ask if I could be a manager. He didn't say no, so I'll talk to him later about it. That'd be a great idea.
You know, through the years, I've really been blessed to be in there with some great teams. You know, Rock and Roll Express, Midnight Express, Steiner Brothers. And, been shows with the Road Warriors and some of the best teams in the business, man. So, and to be in the ring, whether I'm tagging with somebody or in the ring wrestling with a great team and watch some of these great teams and their chemistry and their timing and everything. And it's just amazing. I learned so much from being in the ring with those guys, and as far as tag team wrestling goes, that made me even a bigger fan of tag team wrestling as well. So,
well, you know, I thank Jim Crockett for always keeping tag teams in the forefront. Whenever he did, you know, his Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling or whatever, the main event there on television was always a tag match. And I think really Mid-Atlantic, I think he was responsible more for the acceptance of tag matches throughout, because I know that when we used to go watch wrestling Atlanta or whatever, there were seldom tag matches, or they'd be mid-card, and they just were not the big main event like Jim Crockett did. So I got to send thanks to him. Jim, I hope you're listening to us from wherever you are in that great big squared circle in the sky, and we thank you for everything that you did to help create this marvelous, marvelous sport that we either enjoy or participate in. And so there's my tome to Jim Crockett. He was something else. Because now Papa Stroh, did you ever actually work for you worked for a Crockett promotion at one time? Because I know you did WCW, and you were at Smoky Mountain. And who was in charge of Smoky Mountain? And then did you ever work in Charlotte for Crockett?
Oh yeah, all that not which not too many people knew about. But I've been in the business a lot longer than people think, actually. And then when I tell them stories about back in the day, they're like, "Oh my God!" And which it's always cool that's why it's always cool to catch up with people like Manny Fernandez, Raging Bull, and Jimmy Valiant, and a few others that you know that know my history more or less. So and Kevin Sullivan, and Kevin Sullivan was a big help to me as well through the years, and It's really cool to see people that you start off in the business knowing, and then you keep bumping into them from time to time and indeed through the years. And we're just like one big dysfunctional family, and it makes the world to a smaller place. You know, I got friends overseas. I got friends all over the country. And we're one big family. And somehow or another, no matter where we're at in the world, we always find each other and catch up. So it's really, really cool.
Yeah, well, Stroh, we have a friend of ours who is just calling in from the cold, cold Midwest. Hello, Jen Cruz. How are you doing of the She Squatchers?
Hey, guys. I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Hi, Jen. How's it going?
I'm freezing my buns off up here. But
my
it actually
question
warmed
you,
up.
What's it like up there? I mean, how can you handle that? How cold is it where you are up in North Dakota?
Well, the last couple of days we've had we were in the deep freeze, and we had a wind chill factor of -63 degrees.
Wow.
And I think the coldest it got was -40 on the actual thermometer where I live. That's without the wind chill, -40. So, but right now it's a balmy -2.
Oh my God.
And it's much better than earlier today when I was out. It was -22 degrees when I was out today. And I tell you what, I had layers of clothing on and I was still super cold.
Unreal.
Yeah. I hope Bigfoot's okay.
Well, Matt Delph said, I asked Matt Delph, I said, Matt, what is Bigfoot doing? He said, Bigfoot's down there in a cave right now. I can guarantee it. He's not getting out in this.
Yeah, it's too cold. It's too cold for anybody out there. It's just crazy. They found a woman in her car frozen to death at the park in the parking lot of a grocery store today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, right in town. She was in the parking lot. They found her dead in her car.
Oh,
just crazy.
That's such a horrible, horrible way to die.
Yes, Yes. And, you know, up here we have a lot of farmers and livestock. And, you know, when it gets this cold, they start losing cattle and things like that. It's just too cold for anything to be outside.
Oh, my.
So it's a scary thing when it gets this cold. Yeah. Thank goodness we're used to it. Well, I don't know if you can ever really get used to it, but they build our structures and our electrical wiring and all of that for extreme weather conditions. So it's not like out on the East Coast when they have some weird winter weather and they lose power for a week. We don't usually have that kind of problem up here because they built it for the extremes.
That is tough, right?
Wow. Well, we've got another caller. We have got Jackson Samuel from Australia. We were going to talk a little bit tonight with him about the lizard man of Australia called the Bunyip, and I was going to talk a little bit about that. And Jen, I'm glad you called in because I have I've been under the weather and I have not had a chance to call you up, but I did want to see if sometime in February or March if we could get you as a featured guest here on Scarycast. I'll find you some dates, and we'd love to have you here.
That would be my pleasure.
That'd be awesome. It's always wonderful
having
you and talk.
I'm excited. I would love to hear. I'm tuned in to hear what he has to say.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, Papa Stroh, it's been great reviewing some of these stories. I love where people can hear them because I'm lucky. I know you. We're there together at events all the time, and I hear them. But these stories, I like to get them where people are able to hear them. And I'll say this on Scarycast, where you see us on Spotify, or whether you see us on iTunes or TuneIn or wherever in the archive, I moved some of those great stories, Papa Stroh, that you had about Ivan Koloff. I moved those so that people are actually able to hear them. And I really appreciate you introducing me to, you know, one of the finest people I ever met. And those are now out there on the Scarycast feed for people to listen to. And I just can't thank you enough. And Jen, first of all, I'm glad you're here. If you'll stay with us a little bit, Jackson, how's everything down there in Australia?
Oh, hi there, Dr. John. I'm so sorry that I'm late to come on the show, mate. We've had a big weather change down here. It's really starting to rain heavy again where I am now, and yep, I was caught out in it, and I've just managed to get back. I'm so sorry I couldn't get on earlier.
Well, we're just glad you're here. I mean, that happens to me down here in Myrtle Beach. I mean, right now it's 35. You can hardly get a cell phone call through. Things don't work right down here in Myrtle Beach when it's under 40 degrees. So you're absolutely fine. We're glad you're here. And Papa Stroh's here, and we got Justin, who's one of his fans, who is on his show WCW Retro. And we've got Jen Cruz of the She Squatchers from the absolutely frozen Northern Midwest. And so we're glad we got you here. And what we were going to talk about tonight was when I first met you, I told you, you said, well, Dr. John, what are you interested in this cryptid world? I said, I love the Lizard Man. I ran the Lizard Man Festival. I love Bigfoot. But Lizard Man is right down the road, and this is where he was seen quite a number of times between 1988 and 1990. And he's still seen today. There are people that have incidences, they have property damage in Lee County, South Carolina, and they all know it's the Lizard Man. Everybody can say, oh, Lizard Man's gone, this and that. He's not. He's still there. Don't know where he is. Well, he's out in Scape or Swamp. Now, you and I discussed a little bit the Bunyip. And tell us a little bit about what the Bunyip looks like. Because I said, you know, that could be one way to describe our lizard man.
Okay. Well, here in Australia, there's not really any completely accurate description. From what people have actually said, these are some sort of characteristics that it has. Some say a dog-like face, or an alligator-like head, dark sleek fur or black shaggy hair, horse-like tail, walrus-like tusks, horns, a duck-like bill, deadly claws, powerful hind legs, bright-coloured chest, serrated teeth in the bill, sometimes even being described as having a body of a giant starfish. Some people say it has scales and a long neck. There's so many varied descriptions, no one can accurately describe what they're actually seeing.
Well, you mentioned two different looks for the Bunyip. One is a green or a scaly character, and another one has hair. Is that correct?
Yeah. Some describe it as having scales and hair.
Wow.
Well, it's very interesting. Yeah. In Lyle Blackburn's book, Lizard Man, The True Story of the Monster of Bishopville, the lizard man is about half the time described as having hair. And the other half of the time, lizard man is described as having scales. Now,
okay.
I found that very interesting. People didn't want to talk about that, but that's in Lyle's book because Lyle got the police reports and he interviewed the people. And so he told me, he said, John, I can't help it. It's like, he said, I don't think it will, I mean, Lyle's written two books on Boggy Creek, so I think Lyle knows what Bigfoot is, and he's done his own exploration. But he said half the time we have a creature with shortish brown hair, not incredibly long, and then half the time we have one with scales. That's Christopher Davis, the sighting that shot around the world and got everybody interested in it. His lizard man had scales, but was also incredibly strong and jumped on the top of that car. So, and how long, tell us a little bit about the history, because the Bunyip goes, the sightings go back a long, long time, don't they?
Oh, the sightings here go back well beyond before the European settlers even came to Australia. There's been stories about the Bunyip here for thousands of years, and European settlers were actually warned about it by the local Aboriginals when they first came here. And they didn't really take it seriously until a couple of them saw it themselves. There's actually, I've got a really good story to tell you. There's a saying here in Australia, it's called Buckley's Chance. You got Buckley's Chance of that, which basically means you got no hope at all. Like, you know, you've got bugger all chance of being able to do this sort of thing. Now, that all came, there was a European convict here by the name of William Buckley down in Victoria. And he escaped from a penal settlement here in the 1860s, I think it was. And with nothing but the clothes on his back, he lived for over 30 years in the bush here in Australia. He's managed to survive on shellfish and so on and so forth. And he came across a recently done grave of one of the local Aboriginal elders, and they used to bury them with their spears sticking out of the ground. And he's come across this spear and thought, oh great, this is going to be able to help me get some more food, you know what I mean? And so he's taken the spear. What he didn't know was that the Aboriginals here at that time had never had any experience with the white men, and they believed that if their spirits came back, they'd come back white. And they came across these large white men with their elder's spear that they'd just recently buried, and thought that he was their elder, came back reincarnated, and that's why he couldn't speak their language or anything. So they've taken him back into their tribe, and he's lived with them for over 30 years. And when he came across the European settlers again, they've recognised him as being a white man, and he's gone back through the judicial thing and everything, they've pardoned him, and he became a really historical figure here. And during his time out there in the bush, he described what he saw as being a bunyip. Said it was roughly 12 foot long, maybe 5 foot wide. All he could really see was the back of it, but it scared the living hell out of him. And that's quite well described in a lot of his writings as well. Like, that was one of the first sightings done by a European.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, Jen, I know, if you don't mind me asking you a question, We know that you are a Bigfoot explorer up in the Midwest. Have you ever heard of any stories up in that area about a creature like the Bunyip or the Lizard Man, or are we probably the ones that have them down here near the coast where it's warmer and everything?
Hi, Cable. Usually the most sightings of the Bunyip are down around down in Victoria, down in the state south of where I am. I'm in New South Wales. I'm on the mid-north coast. The east coast of Australia goes for about 2,600 miles, and I'm roughly about halfway along. So most of the sightings have been south of me. Some people describe it as a crocodile, which you would call an alligator, very similar. They only come roughly about 800 miles down the coast from the north, so it can't be a crocodile or an alligator or anything like that. It's got something completely else.
Right. I had asked, and I wanted Jen to weigh in. Have you heard of any lizard man type creatures up in your area, Jen?
Yes, there are Native Americans who talk about seeing what they call the dragons, and they're about 3 to 4 feet tall lizard creatures that are typically on four legs that live along the river and in the river. And they tell me that I could find evidence of this documented in some really old writings by a Native man called Paul Buffalo. His writings are online, the autobiography of Paul Buffalo. And if you cross-reference dragon or dragons with that, you can find it in his writings. And you know, it takes some patience to read an indigenous author's writings because they kind of write in what I call the old Indian guy talk, which I absolutely love. I love the old stories. But they talk about these creatures that live along and in the river and how they sound in their mating season. They come out of the river and they sound like just crazy cows. What's interesting is that people were reporting this before we had cows up here because cows were brought over to this country by the settlers. Before that, we didn't have cattle here. We had bison. So, you know, they're reporting these sounds that sound like cattle just going nuts, but before there were any cattle up here. And I've talked to Native people who have witnessed seeing these during mating season up in northern Minnesota. They won't tell me exactly where. Otherwise, I'd be there checking it out myself. But they are lizard people of some kind that are 3 to 4 feet tall.
Well, you see, Jackson told me something first time we talked, and he said, Jackson, I'm gonna imitate you for a minute. He said, mate, there are these lizard people all over the world. They're not just here in Australia. They're not just in the U.S. They're everywhere. And I don't know why people don't want to acknowledge them. Well, for I guess one reason is they stay pretty well hidden, and which is good. I mean, they probably should the way some folks are. But, they're all over. And, Jen, thank you very much for mentioning that. That's a topic that I'd like to talk with you a little bit more about. You actually sent me a link to Paul Buffalo's autobiography, and I need to sit down and read that here while I'm recuperating before I'm gone all the time like I normally am. But I think that's very interesting. And so you say even to this day there are stories of the lizard people still alive and in that area, wherever they are. Is that correct?
It is correct. I spoke with a Native man up in the Cass Lake Indian Reservation in northern Minnesota just this last summer, and he was telling me that he himself had seen them and observed them outside of the river, and he didn't want to give up the location, but he did invite me to go on an expedition, so I'm hoping to be able to do that maybe next year or this year sometime, course, when the weather is warm.
Yeah, because right now they're down in a cave too right now.
Yeah, probably very much so.
This is too cold, but yeah, that's great. Well,
I would
thank
suspect
you.
That they hibernate. I would suspect that they hibernate. Like other reptilian creatures up here, they usually are all hibernating. And like
yeah.
the turtles and the frogs and the toads, they dig down into the bottom of the water, into the mud, and they hibernate. So I would suspect that
actually,
if there's a reptilian species, that they would probably be doing something similar.
Gotcha. Amazing. I hadn't thought about that. Is that they would be hibernating and Bigfoot would be back in a cave staying warm.
Yeah, probably.
although we don't know what Bigfoot might do, but I know bears hibernate back in those during the winter, so we don't know. So Jackson, what? I know that you're out there doing a lot of exploration because you're a member of BFRO out in Australia, and you go out and look for Bigfoot and everything. Have you ever seen any evidence of the bunyip? Any tracks or stories from any of the people out there in the outback? I guess we could. That's the appropriate phrase, right, Jackson? The outback.
Yeah, actually, most of Australia is the outback. With the bunyip here, it's mostly found in inland freshwater streams. Water holes, dams, that sort of thing. It's not really a desert creature. It's more of a, it's more of a water creature. I believe that they probably hibernate here as well. Like, I just saw a recent story on the news about alligators there in America frozen in a stream with their snouts above the water so they could breathe, and they're frozen in the lake and they go into hibernation.
I saw that too. Yeah, that was really the article I saw talked about alligators in North Carolina doing that, and I had never.
Yep.
Papa Stroh, have you ever seen that over there in Jacksonville? I don't know. I know it doesn't necessarily get that cold that it freezes all the time, but you ever seen alligators hibernating like that?
I wouldn't doubt it. But of course the gators here aren't nearly as big as other places, right? But it definitely wouldn't surprise me in the least.
Yeah, I mean it's amazing. And when you mentioned about fresh water, I want to get this story out. I hadn't talked about it very much. But when I was doing some research right before the first Lizard Man conference, I was speaking with a fella who has a company, and he would go in and he would retrieve old stumps and logs that had descended into the creeks because they apparently make fantastic furniture. And he's got a boutique shop called Swamp Log. And he was telling me that especially that 1988 through 1990 set of sightings, it was extremely, extremely hot and very, very dry for a period of about 5 years. And so what he told me is that when you have all the freshwater bodies, like the swamp and everything, drying up, that lets the water, the seawater, come up the river more. And that's
yep.
what would change something like a lizard man that might really be closer to the ocean, but in fresh water, that might chase the lizard man up toward, say, Scapegoat Swamp or the middle of South Carolina, where they would actually come close to people, unlike normal. And I think that's a – what is the most recent sighting that you can recall of the bunyip? Do you hear about them every year or the last couple of years or what?
Oh, no, they haven't been sighted for quite a few years here, actually. I'm pretty sure they're much like the owie or your Bigfoot. With the encroachment of human development, civilization and everything, they just want to stay away from us. They just want to, they just want to live in peace. There hasn't been a sighting for a while, but as I have said before to other people, like, you can't dispel that they're not out there. I mean, people saying, oh, there's no such thing as a Sela Cance fish. I mean, had been seen for millions of years. They've caught quite a few lately. They said that there's no such thing as the Thylacine, which is the Tasmanian tiger. A few of them have been seen lately too. They thought they'd been killed out back in the 1930s. So just because it hasn't been seen for a few years, don't dispel that it's not out there, because I'm sure it is, my friend.
Yeah, well, I mean that makes complete sense. And the one picture that you sent me showed a fairly ferocious creature with a human being in its mouth eating it. I mean,
yeah,
we hear tales about the lizard man being pretty scary and pretty vicious.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fella at the Cotton Museum that says, well, there's no real tales of a lizard man ever eating anybody or harming anybody or whatever. Well, I don't believe that's the case. I have a couple stories that
Well, the ones
we
you haven't heard
about
are the ones that haven't been found yet.
The victims have been eaten and they weren't able to discuss it.
Exactly.
Oh my. Yeah. That's true.
I'm
now,
sure you can
you
just, I'm sure you can explain a few disappearances over there by something like this.
Yeah, well, I hope that one day I can get over there and we can go out in the swamps and see what we can find. I hope we find it, but can stay far enough away that we don't get caught. And I think that would be good.
I was just going to say, Dr. John, any time you and Matt want to come down here to Australia, you're more than welcome.
Well, maybe we'll get us a whole safari and get Jen and the She Squatchers and Papa Stro, and we'll just all come down there. I think that would be a blast. I'm
good.
Sure that you could you could lead that safari back in the outback, and who knows what we can see, because you're more known in Australia as being a Bigfoot explorer, correct?
I cover a whole range of many and varied things. To tell you the truth, I'm an explorer of truth. I cover everything from ghost hunting to Bigfoot hunting to cryptid hunting to ancient aliens, paranormal, supernatural, you name it. If you've got it, I'm there. I love everything.
Well, that's great. I know we all have to be a little bit of generalists, because I know Jen primarily goes out looking for Bigfoot, but Jen, you have on occasion been on other explorations for other creatures, haven't you?
Oh, of course we have. We went looking for the goat man. We've looked for the little people, the Meme Gleishig. We've actually observed the what they call the ghost lights or the spirit lights. Sometimes the MUFON refers to them as the classic orange orb UFOs, which are, I understand, are like the number one reported UFO, are these classic orange orb UFOs. But associated with Bigfoot sightings up here are often different colors, even like white, green, blue, but most commonly Minnesota people report the green lights. I'm curious if the same kind of thing is happening down in Australia. These orbs of light that are very bright colored in the woods at night, are these also being reported near or at the same time as Bigfoot sightings in Australia?
Oh, g'day, Jen. How are you? Pleasure to meet you. Yeah, there have been orbs that have been noted around sightings or through calls, like not actual sightings. If there have been calls around, there have been lights of some sort. They do tend to range from a blue to a green colour. There have been orbs that have been noted around, and that was, I actually had a question that I put to, on the last show. It's like, is Bigfoot sort of related with the supernatural? Like, could they be the Watchers? Like, that was another question I thought. Like, there has to be some sort of connection between paranormal, supernatural, these lights that go around, and also sightings. They have to be connected in some way. That's basically
why. Jen, what do you think?
Well, I think that's definitely very, very interesting about how often they're reported together, and I like that there's a seems to be a pattern out there. We actually did get we completely by accident, we were investigating a Bigfoot sighting that had been given to us, and the area was actually in the middle of a marshy bog, where there was like a little forest in the middle of a marshy bog. And we found out who owned the property and tried to get permission to go out there, but they said, you can't go out there, you'll fall through the bog and drown. So we couldn't get permission to go out there, so we ended up parking on the road at night using a unocular night vision device that can see pretty far in the dark. And we were just videoing and looking and seeing if we could spot anything, because the sighting had been reported to us as a Bigfoot walking from the one set of trees through this area to the next set of trees in the middle of this bog. And so we were kind of like scrolling through the area trying to see if we could see anything back there at all. And all of a sudden there were these lights that started coming out of this woods in the middle of the bog. And I mean, I made sure there was no roads behind that or on the other side of that. There's no way to get something out there. The owners of the property said you can't go out there because you will fall through and drown. So there's no way that it could have been something else. And these lights were acting very erratically. And what was really, really strange was right before we shut off the camera to leave, all of a sudden it was like the lights flashed near our car from that, like it moved really quickly. And our lights in the car, which was turned off, turned on, off, on, off, on, off. And that was it. And I'm like, okay, I think we need to leave. That's just too weird for me right now. And it was like 1 o'clock in the morning, I think, and it was all dark out there in the middle of the country. It was quite an interesting ordeal. But we were looking for Bigfoot and ended up catching these lights on video. And we did post it up on our YouTube channel. Strange Lights or something is what the video is called. And our YouTube channel is She Squatchers Official. You can find that there if you want to check it out. There was another time when... There was another time when us girls were out looking for Bigfoot, and we, you know, we're doing that all Bigfoot female experiment. Well, it wouldn't be a female experiment unless we occasionally took some men out with us, right? To see how that could be different. Well, one of my former teammates and I were doing that, and we decided it was too different, so we decided to ditch the men and just go out by ourselves. So we had them drop us off in the woods and drive away. And they were watching us from afar in the dark. They could kind of see where we were when we'd turn our flashlights on from a distance. And they were watching these green orb lights that seemed to be following us above the trees, like staying behind us and like following us for about 35 minutes. And my former teammate's husband said that he thought we would have seen them, but they apparently were staying behind us and above the trees, and we never saw these lights. But he said it seemed like they were following us. And he observed them for about 35 minutes. So that was really interesting.
Wow.
That happened to be in an area where we'd had considerable Bigfoot interactions before, and there had been a sighting by somebody who had had difficulty coming in to the boat launch from fishing at sundown because there was a Bigfoot in the shallows of the water that was kind of stalking him along the shoreline and wasn't letting him come in. It was being kind of aggressive with him as if he wanted him to give up his fish, his whole catch of fish. So we were right there in that location at that boat launch where the Bigfoot had been just a few weeks earlier. So that was an interesting thing too.
Did he give up his catch?
He did not. He was actually stuck in his boat with this Bigfoot were stalking him along the shoreline. And he ended up waiting a couple hours, and he was going back and forth, and the Bigfoot was following him along the shoreline. And so he just stayed out where it was deeper. And finally somebody realized he wasn't home yet, and they thought maybe something was wrong, and his cell phone had died. And he's in this canoe by himself. And so somebody drove out there to see if he was okay. And when they drove up to the boat launch and, you know, shined their light and started honking their horn to see if he was anywhere, it scared the Bigfoot off into the woods. They went back the next day and got some really impressive footprints casted in the mud. And the cast of Finding Bigfoot TV show quickly came up and did an episode up here to look into that. So that was really, really interesting. And to look into that area was really fun for us as well.
Wow.
So, yeah.
It's amazing.
Are there cases in Australia where Bigfoot kind of stalks fishermen for their catch? Does that happen down there?
No, not really as much down here. They just try to stay away from basically anyone, really. Hadn't really heard many stories about stalking fishermen, but I have heard many stories of pigs and goats and things getting snatched, and other livestock, chickens, and so on and so forth. Yeah, there's a lot of that sort of stuff going on around here. Be vocalizations, things thrown at houses, animals taken. Not so much as fishermen and so forth being stalked, but there is a lot of the other stuff going on that people are starting to look into now and wondering what's going on. And I'm like, well, this is what it is. They're like, well, that can't be real. I'm like, well, look at the evidence. So people are starting to come around, really. A lot of livestock's getting taken. A lot of other things are getting taken as well. So. We have a lot of things going on down here.
They say it can't be real, but it's happening. Now, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, Matt.
Wow. Well, that's very, Jen, that was a great story, and that was a great kind of counter from all. There's just such a huge world out there at Bigfoot. Bigfoot is so popular. That is one reason we have the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference. And now we also have one in Georgia. There's so many people that are just interested. They have stories to share. Jen, I guess it's probably been your experience. A lot of people have Bigfoot sighting stories to share, don't they?
They do, and they love to come and share them with us. And I know how liberating that must be for them, because many people don't dare talk about it with anyone for fear of being called crazy or looked at funny. But when they come to these conferences, they love to tell you about it, because they know they're in a safe place that they can share. And it's just a wonderful experience for them. And, of course, I always love hearing the stories that people are having, experiences, and the differences between areas and the similarities as well. How, you know, because Tennessee is really far from where we live. It's a 22-hour drive one way. So,
yeah, well, it's a little bit further to drive there for me, Jen.
Yeah, I bet. I don't know if you could drive here.
No. It'd be
driving to Siberia. But and you know, it was really interesting. I got into some conversations at the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference. One fella I found out is a well-known he's a DUI attorney, and he apparently has a lot of billboards out all over town. And I was just sitting here this morning, and I happened to look, and I saw the sheet of paper where I'd written his story on, and called him and left him a message. I want to get him on the Bigfoot podcast that we have, because I'll tell him we'll keep the fact that he is a well-known attorney in Kingsport on the down low. But he's got a great story, and his fiance was standing there saying, "Yeah, I know, I saw it. Absolutely, I was with him. It's for real." And I love it when people really do want to share. Jackson, you probably get a lot of folks wanting to share their Bigfoot stories with you down there in Australia, don't you?
I do get a few, but like it's people here, like, I'm not sure if they're just sort of ignorant or don't want to listen, but a lot of people here keep their stories to themselves in fear of ridicule, like what Jen was saying. It's like when you go to a conference or something, you have that release where you need to get out something that you have to want to get out, and those are the people that want to listen. Like, it's sort of sad. I've got probably more friends in America like you that believe in this more than I've got friends here in Australia. They just don't open their minds as much. They haven't been out in the bush. They don't go out there and explore, and yeah, they don't get the chance to see. So most people here are ignorant, which is really sad, because we need to get out there and look for these guys. And but if we have to prove that they're real to protect them, then that's what we have to do. That, like, you know, they're people just like us, just a different lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well,
and
I'll share something with everybody. And if you see where I live, I have a whole bunch of papers, and I've got to find the phone number of a fellow who's a North Carolina Park Ranger. And I met him and his father when we were doing caricatures in Wilmington over Christmas. And Jen, I had on my Believe shirt, the one that you folks gave us. You remember those?
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's awesome.
Yeah, and he said, what do you mean Believe? So I pulled out my bank bag, which has, as you know, has Lizard Man on it. I said, I run a Bigfoot conference and a Lizard Man conference. Of course I believe. And he just warmed right up to me. And in the scope of a minute, he told me that the North Carolina Park Rangers get Bigfoot training every year at their annual continuing education conference. I said, you're kidding.
Yeah.
He said, hold on a minute. Got on his phone. He showed me the training schedule for this March. And it said Bigfoot 101 with Mike Murphy. And I was shocked. I said, you're kidding. He said, no. I said, you take this, the Bigfoot thing, very seriously. Now, we're in the mall. There are tons of people around. People are starting to listen to this. He said, yes, we do, and we better leave it at that until you call me. I said, okay, no problem. So, to everybody, to all of our panelists tonight and to everybody listening, Park Service takes Bigfoot very, very seriously. This is not just something that is the figment of someone's imagination. If they're getting the park rangers to take training every year on how to handle Bigfoot situations, we can only imagine what the training's like in Washington. I hate to even think. We had Tom Cantrell from Washington. I should have asked him that. He's actually going to be a speaker at the West Georgia Bigfoot Conference down in Atlanta, which is going to be 3 weeks before the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference. So hopefully we'll get some folks from Atlanta, Jen, coming up when the She-Squatchers make their reappearance in Tennessee. And I know a lot of people are already looking forward to seeing you. But we're about at the end of our time now on ScaryCast. Number one, it has been great catching up with Papa Stroh, some of the best stories of wrestling I know. And Papa Stroh, thank you so much for sharing those with us here on ScaryCast, because a lot of our listeners, they enjoyed it when you were on with L.A. Tank a couple weeks ago, and you got some of your very best stories that I like so much, some of the paranormal ones. You got them on here, and so Papa Stroh, we really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah. We were glad to, and it's always a pleasure being with you on that magnificent WCW Retro. As I said, you and I, we rule Thursday night there on VSC Nation now, which is kind of cool. And then you're also one of the you're the senior cast member for Pop Culture Stars on Wednesday night, and now everybody can hear you all over in a number of different networks, including iTunes, TuneIn, and Spotify. And so that's really great. And we're just glad to have you on our shows, because you bring a lot of experience and all that. And I will say thank you, Jen Cruz, for calling in It's just wonderful talking to you. And I will get up with you really soon. I've got a couple things I want to chat with you about. And we'll talk about a guest spot for you on ScaryCast end of February or early March, whenever it's convenient for you. And I hope you don't freeze. But Jen, thanks for calling in. We appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. It was nice chatting with you guys again. I sure do miss you.
Miss you too.
Yep.
Stay warm,
well,
Jen.
We miss you. And finally, Jackson, thank you so much for coming on. And then Jen's got the cold. You've got the rain. I've got the bronchitis and Papa Stroh's. The only one that's there and ready and in good health. So, but anyway, it's Jackson. It was great having you on here. I want to get you back on here soon to talk more about the Bunyip and about Bigfoot. Will you do that for us?
Most definitely, it would be my pleasure, Dr. John. I'd just like to give a big shout out to Jen. Thank you so much for hearing about your experiences as well. I listen to She Squatches whenever I can. It's a great show. Big shout out to Papa Stroh as well. Hope you enjoyed your birthday the other day, mate, and had a good night at Music Board.
Oh, it was a great time.
Yep.
It was a great time.
Oh,
and we had a great time seeing Cassie doing her thing, and it was a real pleasure, man. And always a pleasure, Jackson, really.
Yep, same here, my friend, same here. And a big shout out to Matt as well. I'm sure I'll chat with you soon, my friend.
Yep. And also, Jen.
Thank you very much. And also, thank you very much for having me on the show. I'm so sorry that I tuned in, that I couldn't get on earlier.
Well, it was the rain. And, Jen, do you have a minute that you can plug your show? You've got a mighty wonderful show.
Oh, yeah. Well,
sure does.
She Squatchers broadcast weekly on Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central on the para-x.com radio station. You can find us on the TuneIn radio apps and iTunes, streaming all over the place. But if you want to check out our past recorded shows, you can find them at thejourneyradioshow.com. And hey, check out our website for the She Squatchers. It's shesquatchers.com. Most of our up-to-date information is on Facebook, so check out She Squatchers on Facebook and give us a like. Thank you, everybody.
That's right.
Thank you, Jen.
Give Papa Stroh a like. Give ScaryCast a like, and give the She Squatchers a like. Just like, love everybody in this paranormal
right.
world.
Yep,
I think that's,
right.
That's,
don't
that's
forget
that
paranormal down under too.
That's right.
That's exactly right. Jackson and I are going to start talking. Once we get this one figured out, we're going to start talking on a regular basis about the paranormal down under, because there's a lot going on down there and keeps me off the streets and out of trouble. And so it's a lot of fun. This podcasting world is a lot of fun, along with the Comic-Cons and the conferences. So I want to thank all my friends. Justin, thank you for calling in. Thank you, Papa Stroh. Thank you, Jackson. Thank you, Jen. It's great to have wonderful friends that we can communicate and have good conversations. And people do listen now. I'm going to tell you that. So I want to thank everybody. Check out ScaryCast.com. Our next adventure will be 4 p.m. Eastern. There's the British lady, 4 p.m. Eastern time on Monday for Bigfoot and Company, Dr. John and Matt Delf. So I'm going to say good evening. Thanks to everyone who tuned in. Thanks to Jackson for being here as our guest. Papa Stroh was a guest tonight, and Jen came on, and she was a guest too, Jen Cruz of the She Squatchers. Thanks a lot. Have a great week, and we will talk to you again soon on ScaryCast.